I know many of you are still finishing your meal. Please do so. But we have a wonderful program for you today that's being presented in the form of a fireside chat. I am going to quickly introduce Rick Lenny, who is the member who has so graciously introduced us to Chris. Our host, as Rick, he is currently serves as the chairman of Conagra Brands, was CEO of Hershey, and he is, now lead independent director of Illinois Tool Works. As a tie-in today's speaker, however, he was a director of McDonald's from 2005 to last year, right? So, Rick.
Thank you, Beth. I am most pleased to introduce our featured speakers. Bill Perez is a highly accomplished business executive. Bill was the CEO of SC Johnson, Nike, and Wrigley. Bill previously served on the boards of Johnson & Johnson, Kellogg's, and Campbell's Soup, and is currently on the board of the NCH Healthcare System. Chris Kempczinski, or commonly known as Chris K, became CEO of McDonald's in November 2019. In the 4 years that Chris has been CEO, McDonald's stock has increased from $194 a share to $297 a share, a gain of 53%. However, this is only part of the story. Following the abrupt departure of McDonald's prior CEO, Chris was confronted with a crisis of confidence in the company's leadership, its values, and the very future of McDonald's. Bill and Chris will discuss this in depth. Suffice it to say, what Chris has done to transform the company, its culture, and its results are without equal. Let's get started. Bill?
Okay.
Chris, let's go back in time a bit.
Okay.
Back to the McDonald brothers, to Ray Kroc. Tell us a bit about the heritage of this company.
Sure. It's a great heritage. So Ray was 52. Ray was a multi-mix salesman. A multi-mix salesman is basically he was selling milkshake machines. and he had heard about this one restaurant out in San Bernardino, California, where incredibly they had eight of these machines. And ordinarily, when Ray was selling into a restaurant, he would sell in one or two. And he couldn't believe, how is it that this one restaurant can afford eight of these things? So he went out to see the McDonald's brothers and to see their restaurant, McDonald's. And he was so impressed with it, he tried to convince the McDonald's guys. He goes, you have to open up more restaurants, thinking I'm going to sell a lot more milkshake machines. And they said, well, you know, we're not really into doing that. We're kind of happy with our life, et cetera. And Ray said, well, you should sell it to somebody then. And they said, well, who? And Ray said, well, what about me? And so Ray struck a deal with the McDonald's brothers where he would give them one half of 1% of gross revenue, and he could open up McDonald's restaurants all around the U.S., Well, Ray, there was one condition, though, on that one half of 1%, which is Ray couldn't do anything to the restaurant different than what was in San Bernardino without the permission of the McDonald's brothers. So to give you an example, when Ray then went to go open the second restaurant in Des Plaines, Illinois, he wanted to put a basement into the restaurant to house the furnace. Well, he had to go to the McDonald's brothers to get permission because they didn't have a basement in the McDonald's in San Bernardino. So he was in violation of the agreement. So after about 5 years of going back to the McDonald's brothers, asking for every single possible adjustment, he said, this is crazy. I need to just go and buy these guys out. So he asked the McDonald's brothers, well, how much is it going to take for me to buy you out? And they said, well, let us think about it. They came back to him with a number, and they said, $2.7 million. So Ray's net worth at that time was $95,000. So there was a little bit of a problem. And Ray only owned about 52% of the company at that point. So Ray got introduced to this guy who, named Bill Roddy. He was out of Philadelphia, and Bill happened to manage the endowments for Princeton, Swarthmore, Rutgers, and he asked him for a loan, and Bill agreed to give Ray a loan for $2.7 million with kind of an interesting condition. And the condition was, however long it takes you to pay me back on this loan with interest, you have to then pay me that same amount of time, the 0.5% that you were paying to the McDonald's brothers. So if it takes you 5 years to pay me back this loan, for the next 5 years after you've paid me back the loan, you owe me 0.5% off of the gross revenue. So by the time Ray got through paying all that back, the $2.7 million ended up being $14 million that he paid to this money manager. But he owned the brand, and the rest is history.
You know, what a great story. So, Chris, when you became CEO, as I recall, because I live in Chicago, there was quite a bit of turbulence at the top of McDonald's. And as part of that welcoming note, COVID hit.
Yep.
Tell us about, you know, leading a company that where there's been a lot of change, where the environment has changed, where the culture is being challenged, and how do you go about doing all that?
Sure. Well, I'd say while the two events, the departure of my predecessor, really the termination of my predecessor, and then COVID, were close together. They were two separate events. When I came in, you know, my predecessor, it's all on the internet, so I'm not sharing anything you guys don't know, which is he was dismissed for violating company policy about having relationships with company employees. And so the board dismissed the CEO as part of that. And I came in, and I would say for in the company of McDonald's, this was a seismic event. And McDonald's is a company that prides itself, and employees feel a huge sense of pride and affinity for being a values-based company. And here was a situation, an event that was incongruous with how many people felt and thought about the company. And it was a little bit of what Rick set up in his opening. And so, you know, my job one coming in was to make people recognize that, no, the values of this company, if anything, the departure of my predecessor should be seen as a reaffirmation of how important the values are in this company. And we spent some time reminding people about what the values of McDonald's were all about, which served us actually incredibly well, not anticipated, but when COVID hit, there was a lot of things that happened through COVID, and one of the things that happened is, you know, we were deemed an essential business at McDonald's, and we were deemed an essential business because basically it was, you know, you need some place that can serve people food. And in some places around the world, we actually were selling bread and milk and other things out of our drive-thrus. So we were deemed an essential business, but you still had to convince people to be willing to go work at McDonald's. You probably all remember, but there was a tremendous amount of fear associated with COVID and with what it could potentially do to your health. And it required our people to be willing to feel like what they were doing at McDonald's was more important than just a job, that they actually needed to come into the restaurant to be there to support their communities, which is one of our core values. And so we did actually remarkably well through COVID, but I think it was because people felt this immense pride of being associated with McDonald's and feeling like, yes, the communities that we serve, they need us right now. And so, you know, we had people coming into the restaurants and putting on all the protective gear and stuff like that because they felt like the mission was bigger than just a job.
Now, you serve something like 70 million meals a day.
We have 70 million orders a day, but okay, we probably have more meals than that because people are, you know, typically buying multiple meals with their order.
And you're in 100 countries.
115 countries, yep.
So, How do you know what to sell, what to serve?
Well, the good news is I didn't have to start. So there's a lot of stuff that was begun before me. And we have a core menu around the world wherever you go where you're always going to be able to get a Big Mac, no matter where you go in the world. You're always going to be able to get McDonald's French fries, no matter where you go in the world. So we have our core menu, which is about, call it 65% of our menu. And that's the foundation. And then one of the things that is great about McDonald's is we allow our markets to also introduce products that are locally relevant. So we're a global brand, but we also have products that are locally relevant. And a lot of that, you know, comes from inspiration from our franchisees, where our franchisees live in those communities. They own the business. They are passionate about, you know, what they see in their market, what their competitors are doing, and they love to think about new McDonald's products. And so many of the ideas emanate from our franchisees, and then, of course, we have our own internal teams that will do work as well. And we typically will bring them in, we'll test them somewhere, and then after a test, if it's successful, we can roll them out, and many products end up getting rolled out globally.
Wow. You know, tell me a bit about running a business through franchises.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the CEO sends the order to Salesforce and things happen. You've got to be persuasive, I guess.
We do. I mean, it's not just franchisees, but our suppliers. We talk about at McDonald's that it's a three-legged stool system, and the three legs of the stool are the company employees, and you know, attached to us as shareholders. We have our franchisees, but we also have our suppliers. And one of the things that people don't often recognize or realize about McDonald's is while we're the largest provider of food in the world, we don't own a single meatpacking facility. We don't own farms anywhere. We don't own any of our supply chain. It's all done through our supplier partners. And the genius of what Ray Kroc set up in the beginning is the sense that we all have to win equally. So the visual image, the metaphor of a three-legged stool, was if any leg of the stool gets out of balance, then you can't use the stool. The stool doesn't work. So our franchisees need to make money, we need to make money, and our suppliers need to make money. So it's a great system, but to your point, it requires a lot of aligning. It requires a lot of communication. We have 5,000 franchisees around the world. Everywhere from royal families who own the business in an entire country to a one-store operator. So a very diverse group of franchisees. And then we have to also align our suppliers. We have hundreds of suppliers around the world. So it requires a lot of communication. It requires a lot of listening, but it also requires sort of a win-win-win sort of mentality. You got to be coming at everything from, why would a franchisee want to go do this? Why would a supplier want to go do this? And why does this make sense for us? And usually when you come in with that approach, it takes a little finessing, but you get there.
You got it. You know, it seems like consumer habits are changing. We have the weight loss drugs that help people lose weight. You see a lot of vegan offerings in restaurants and this focus on healthy eating, healthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
How has that impacted?
Well, Ray Kroc had a famous quote. He was asked, this was in the 70s, that somebody asked him, they said, well, what are you going to be selling 5 years from now? And he said, I have no idea what we're going to be selling 5 years from now, but I know we're going to be selling more of it than anybody in the world. And I think that thinking has pervaded ever since, which is, you know, we let the customer tell us what they're interested in buying. And so over the years, as many of you I think will realize, we've brought a lot of different products into our restaurants. And I describe our menu as very Darwinian. It is survival of the fittest. So we will sell whatever the customer is buying. And I had somebody say, oh, you don't sell that egg white delight anymore. You know, when can you bring that back? And I'm like, well, when you can start buying more of it. So I think for us, you know, we'll stay nimble. We've launched Impossible Burger, Beyond Meat. You know, we did that. Didn't work. Wasn't successful. Doesn't mean that, you know, won't necessarily be successful in the future, but The interesting thing, by the way, is we launched it in two markets. We said we're going to test our Beyond Meat burger at McDonald's. We're going to test it in San Francisco, and we're going to test it in West Lubbock, Texas. Thinking that, you know, we've kind of picked the two extremes of where you can go test it. Well, the punchline is we sold more in West Lubbock, Texas than we sold in San Francisco. So you can't predict these things. On the GLP-1, you know, there's a lot of talk about it. The two things I was asked about this, we had an investor day in December. I said, there's only two things I can tell you for sure about GLP-1s. One is it's having zero impact on our business today. And two is nobody has any idea of what the impact is going to be in the future. So we're going to continue to assess it. And if we need to change the menu over time, we have the capability to go do it. But it's ultimately driven by what's the consumer interested in buying.
Can you just take a couple minutes and tell us about your competitive set? Who do you, I shouldn't say fear, but who do you think is doing a very good job?
Yeah. So one of the things that's interesting about our competitor set is it varies very much by country. So in the U.S., certainly you would recognize Chick-fil-A would be a formidable competitor in the U.S. If you go to the U.K., Greggs would be a formidable competitor for us in the U.K. If you go to Australia, Hungry Jack's is a formidable competitor for us in Australia. The point is I can go through every single country, and there is some, you know, local brand there that does a very good job. And then you have a few of the other brands like a Starbucks, like a Kentucky Fried Chicken that we'll compete with in markets around the world. But our number one competitor tends to be the local restaurant. You know, that's who we are competing with. When we look at our share of the market, we only have a 10% share of what we define as kind of the non-tablecloth, we call it informal eating out. But we only have about a 10% share of it. And by far, the biggest share that we compete with is the local restaurants. The other competitor that we worry about is, frankly, people cooking at home. And we're competing with people cooking at home. So one of the things that actually our business correlates to is the price of groceries. The more expensive groceries get, the more they tend to be willing to eat out, and the better we do. And the cheaper groceries tend to be, the more people eat in, and that also affects our business. So I'd say we compete with everybody.
Chris, I'm intrigued about your digitization.
Yep.
I wonder how it's going nationally, and I wonder if you know how it's doing here in Naples.
Sure. Let me start with, so digital is for us a huge part of our business. So today, 40% of our orders globally are coming through, basically call it a phone, a digital app. In a country like China, it's 90% of our business in China is coming through the phone. So, and this business is growing every single year. So I get asked, you know, what do you think digital penetration is going to be in the U.S.? I could easily get to 75%.
Wow.
In the U.S. We have, globally, we have 150 million people who are in our McDonald's loyalty program, and we just recently said that we're going to take that number to 250 million. We have 70 million loyalty members in China, so digital is a huge, huge part of the business, and it's allowing us to rethink the business in some different ways. You know, the most probably important way is, for years and years, when we said billions and billions served, it was billions and billions served basically the same way. Yep. You either walk up to the front counter or you went through the drive-through. But as we get more and more of these orders are happening on the phone, it's now billions and billions served, but we're doing it in a much more personalized way. So you can imagine a day when you drive up to a McDonald's and the digital menu board that you see in the drive-through changes based on what we know your preferences are for ordering. The suggestions that go and get prompted are going to be based on your order right. history and what you're interested in buying. The deals, the offers that we give you are going to be tailored to you based on what you're interested in buying, et cetera. So it opens up for us just, you know, a whole new avenue sure. for us to deliver a more personalized McDonald's, which what we tend to see is when we get a digital customer, they visit us 15% more often. So there's a tremendous benefit for us of getting more and more of these customers to becoming developing a digital relationship with us over time.
I want to make sure we have time. We should all hear about Cosmix, Alex, about the concept, which I think is really spot on with today's younger folks in particular. Tell us a bit about it, and I know you'll study it, read it, and see
sure.
what happens.
So just very quickly, we announced in December that we were going to be testing in less than 10 restaurants. So let's keep it all in perspective. We have 40,000 restaurants. We're going to test in less than 10. But we're going to build a new restaurant called Cosmix, spelled C-O-S-M-C apostrophe S. Mix. You get the connection there. And the market that we're going after with that is focused largely on beverages. So today, a McDonald's restaurant is typically 80% food, 20% beverages. And Cosmix is intended to be probably more like 70% beverages, 30% food. And the reason that we needed to do it as a separate concept is today what customers want around the world, it's not just in the U.S., but with beverages, they want maximum customization. So if it's a coffee, expect five different types of milk. And I want, you know, different types of syrups and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If it's a lemonade or a limeade, you know, I want to be able to put strawberries in it, or I want to be able to put boba tea in it, or mix, you know, all these different sorts of things, which are great and fun and exciting. But if you're running a restaurant, you're running a kitchen, really complicated. And what we can't afford to do is to offer that degree of beverage customization and slow down the drive-through, which means we're going to sell less Big Macs, less French fries, et cetera. So the idea here is to spin it out and do it in its own concept, a beverage-focused concept. It's typically about a third the size of a McDonald's. It doesn't have a dining room. It's drive-through and delivery only. We do offer some food items, like you'll be able to order an Egg McMuffin. You'll be able to order a McFlurry, but it's largely going to be focused on beverages. And beverages for us, it's in our top six markets. It's about $100 billion category. It's growing high single digits, and margins in beverages tend to be better than food. So hugely attractive category for us. Whether you know we've got it right, that's what we're going to find out in this test.
Okay, I've got one last question because I see Rick accumulating a large number of questions. I know you love all your McDonald's children equally.
Yes, I do.
But do you have a favorite?
Well, it's usually the one I'm visiting at the time. So I was just in Elizabethtown, Kentucky yesterday visiting a bunch of our restaurants. We have three restaurants in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, which is about an hour south of Louisville. But I think, you know, when I'm going in for breakfast, I love the Egg McMuffin. Lunch, you know, what I think is our best burger is the Quarter Pounder with cheese, but I also love the McChicken. So I know my way around the menu, for sure, and we have a lot of great products.
Great. Thank you. Rick, you ready to take over?
First off, let's thank our speakers. Fabulous job.
Thank you.